Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. I've got a poem for you again. This one is by Donald Hall, and it's entitled The Oxcart Man. In October of the year, he counts potatoes dug from the brown field, counting the seed, counting the seller's portion out, and bags the rest on the cart's floor. He packs wool sheared in April, honey in combs, linen, leather tanned from deer hide, and vinegar in a barrel hooped by hand at the forge's fire. He walks by his ox's head 10 days to Portsmouth Market and sells potatoes in the bag that carried potatoes, flaxseed, birch brooms, maple sugar, goose feathers, yarn. When the cart is empty, he sells the cart. When the cart is sold, he sells the ox, harness and yoke, and walks home, his pockets heavy with the year's coin for salt and taxes. And at home by fire's light in November cold, stitches new harness for next year's ox in the barn, and carves the yoke, and saws planks, building the cart again. What'd you think, Steve?
Well, so I want to put a gold star at the top of your paper for yet again choosing a fitting poem, choosing a poem that makes me think and whatnot. I feel like if I was doing my teacherly duty and writing some critique on the margin, that flowing red river of ink, the criticism would be that you just about get me content and happy with Robert Frost being the poet of the podcast. And then you go throw some, what was his name? Donald Hall into the mix that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
And now I'm having trouble following you, man.
Oh man. Well, Donald Hall deserves to be a part of what we're doing here. He is, I guess we should call him the late Donald Hall now. He recently passed away. But he is a fantastic poet. I got to give him props. I got to appreciate what he's doing. I mean, come on. That was a good poem.
It was. And I, again, gold star. Don't ever want my student to not see that. But it amazes me that when I put the gold star up there at the top of the paper, they quickly forget that because they're focused on all these red marks that I've put down through their papers. Right. And despite the gold star, the complaint is, Mr. Elliott, why did you hate my paper? I didn't. It's got the gold star. I don't give those gold stars to everybody, man. Got the gold star. Why does it feel like I hate you? Well, all this red ink, it's just so hard. Mm. So,
oh, yeah. Well, guys, we're talking about critique today. If you haven't noticed, we're talking about, I don't know, criticism. You know, part of the teacher's duty is to correct and critique, and lots of other synonyms that we're going to come up with soon here. But that's where we're going to start and end today, I guess.
If I can jump in, this is where, again, our distinction between art and science becomes so important, because I don't think the extremes are obvious in this regard. I've had coaches throughout my life that are all across the gamut of criticism. I had the angry football coach, mm-hmm. who, when we won 54-0, the next practice is not, guys, that was a fantastic game. You just crushed them. It immediately was this tirade about how this was wrong and this wasn't right, and you guys jumped the gun on this, and that one pass was just, you know. I can't dismiss the fact that with all of his tirades and with all of his dissatisfaction came a team who didn't want to displease the coach and that tried all the harder. I don't know that he ever crushed us, but it was tough to take the negative all the time. And then I had a basketball coach one time who quite literally, I don't think ever said a negative word.
Wow.
And unfortunately, I can't claim as good a record for that basketball team as the football team.
Right.
I think criticism becomes a form of motivation that if I yell loud enough, they'll just jump higher. And I don't, I especially as a humanities teacher, I want to emulate being humane, not being a
exactly
jerk, you know.
Right.
I perform well in English class because Mr. Elliott is so mean. That's not really where I was headed with that.
Right. Yeah. My okay, while we're swapping sports stories, I had a coach who said, it was in the middle of practice. We were playing like a game, okay, in practice. And he said, he blew the whistle and he said, okay, I tried to motivate you guys with fun, but you're not playing hard. The best motivator that I know is fear. Everybody get on the line. We don't want that, right? Like you said, Steve, the extremes are bad. We don't want that. Maybe that was called for on the football field, but it's not in the classroom. And so, you know, when we're talking about criticizing students or critiquing students, I think one really natural thing that we want to do is immediately stop talking about critiquing students and instead talk about something else. Like, well, yeah, but instead of telling them that you did it wrong, instead of telling them that they did it wrong, you can praise what they did. Yes, you can. And I think you should in a lot of situations. So I'm not saying that that's bad, but I'm saying there are times when students can benefit significantly from critique, helpful, humane, wholesome critique. And so that's what we're after today.
And as you were talking, I was thinking through the fact that we build, any school reflects a culture that is built by what is and is not done in its midst. And if it's always, if all you can do is state in the negative how to improve, the student eventually is going to say, well, I can't do anything pleasing, you know, come on.
Right.
I did make a few free throws, coach. You know, I did have a few subjects and verbs that agreed, Mr. Elliott. the whole paper wasn't just wrong. There was right aspects. And on the other hand, though, I'm nervous that the pendulum swing that often happens in this is that while I can certainly look at certain aspects of British education in the 19th century, early 20th century American education, where you can point and say that was really harsh. There was a lot of knuckle cracking going on there. Sort of the Pink Floyd, another brick in the wall, British dudes yelling at the end about pudding and meat and all that kind of stuff. As the pendulum has swung, and I now see many students unable to handle what you're describing as good or helpful criticism because they've never had any criticism.
Right.
Well, that's an equally harmful situation. If you can't grow without good criticism, then basically you've put the kids in a position where they can't grow.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to break here. And then when we come back, we'll talk about situations where we should not criticize.
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page. Send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show. So, Jason, you challenged us to jump into this circumstance of criticism, and I think that there's obviously, we've already said that there's good criticism, which assumes that there must be bad criticism.
Yes.
And I think, like any good teacher or comedian, a lot of it has to do with timing.
Yeah.
And this is why it's an art.
Yeah.
Is I, as the teacher, have to get used to knowing when to say something and when not to say something. And I think timing is ultimately determined by purpose. Why?
Good.
You tell us, Jason, why would we criticize a student?
Okay. Yeah. I'm really glad you started there. Why would we criticize? Well, I could fall back on an oldie but a goodie, and I could say we criticize to cultivate wisdom and virtue. Now, that might be a little bit unsatisfactory, but just because it's unsatisfactory doesn't make it any less true. I do think that is ultimately why we would criticize or critique a student. Maybe I'll unpack it a bit. We critique a student in an effort to make their soul better, in an effort to bring them closer to God, right? Kierkegaard says to love someone is to help them love God. And so critique should always be loving. And it should always, and what I mean by that is, it should always be aimed at helping the student love God and his fellow man better.
Yep. And this is, we've discussed this in other podcasts, but this is where this notion of the tyrannizing image, the ideal,
mm-hmm.
that there is some way to compare what I have created with what I ideally ought to have created at a young student, someone in the student relationship between master and student needs the wiser teacher to say, that was good. We got to start.
Yeah.
But especially in something like the writing process is what I'm often thinking about. But I think this is true. I can't think of a subject where this wouldn't be the case, that this initial attempt of the student to do mm-hmm. and any subsequent attempt is going to fall short of the ideal.
Right.
And that the teacher lovingly is guiding them toward the ideal, not letting them set. We're talking about the raising of taste.
That's right. Without the crushing of spirit.
Right. It's not that you're a bad writer.
Exactly.
The best writer starts to learn to evaluate their own writing. And young people just aren't going to do that. I mean, I teach high schoolers every day. And they really think that first draft is really good. And
sure they do.
And they need to hear from their teacher that I, who write on my own right, and I have an editor who's half my age, you know, that I appreciate the fact that my editor goes at my work, not because she hates me, but because she and I are both trying to produce superior work and just make it the best it could possibly be. And so she's trying to help me see where my weakest parts are and how to improve it. And mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be a negative experience, but there's a lot packaged in that brief description of the relationship.
Right. Definitely.
This is a good start. It God helping me. We're going to get better at this. We're going to see improvement. We're going to see progress. So that begs the question in the classroom, when is it wrong to give criticism.
Yeah, so I would say there's a lot of situations, too many to list, although it might be beneficial to try, when it would be wrong or less than best to criticize a student. I would say certainly if the student is like, let's start with easy ones. If the student is in an emotionally precarious state, you want to be easy with the critique in that situation. You know, if a kid is visibly troubled, yeah, it's probably not the time to critique them, especially harshly.
Right. So we're almost back at talking about Socrates.
Like always.
Let me see if I can develop that comment. When you read Plato's accounts of Socrates' dialogues,
mm-hmm.
he sometimes meets people that are already seeking the truth, and he just jumps in and helps them run on down the path.
Exactly.
And I have students who come to me saying, well, a good example at the beginning of a school year, one of the first things I assigned to my seniors is, you guys have got to do this Common App thing. You got to write an essay to try and get into college. Gee, maybe your English teacher could help you with that. So right. here's this year's Common App prompts. Choose one. You know, I'm blessed and thankful that it's a 650 word maximum. So write That's it up nice. And let me see what you got. And some of them come even before the due date going, because their motivation is keen. I've got these applications that I want to use this on. You've given me a great assignment, Mr. Elliott. I'm going to use this. It's not just a turn and get a great thing. But then I have others that just aren't in that motivational world. And when Socrates met people who thought a C was cool or thought the first draft was okie dokie, there's nothing to learn here. Move on. He would ask these Jesus-esque questions like Jesus asked the Pharisees.
Yeah.
You know, hey, dummy.
Right.
Answer me this question. Yeah.
He would prod him, right?
Right. Well, I'll call him out. Not, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be coming off on this podcast as though I'm suggesting we belittle our students. That's not what I'm saying. But
yeah,
don't
say hey dummy to your students ever.
Right. But the question is designed to make the student say to himself, oh, there's more here than I thought.
Exactly. And so that would be another situation where I would say, don't offer critique until the student has buy-in.
Yeah.
Like your red pen does nothing if they do not care. And so, well, except maybe embitter them. So I would say don't start offering that critique until the student is desiring it.
So after we come back from the break, I got a question for you about sort of a devil's advocate thing.
Okay.
Because I know where many teachers are going to go with what you just said.
Oh, boy. Okay.
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
All right, Steve, what's up?
Everything you said in the previous section, I'm in agreement with. I'm not arguing against what you said, but it begs the question, if I only offer criticism to students who, I guess for lack of a better term, want it or are ready to receive it,
mm-hmm.
what about at times it seems like the vast majority of my students who don't want any criticism, who are already quite secure in their knowledge, they wrote the best paper they can, they think it's great, and you know your student well enough to know that if I start writing the red ink, which for many teachers is a justification for the grade given, right? If an A doesn't have many comments on the paper because it's really good. Mm-hmm. A C demands that I'm marking up this, that, and the other thing that could have been better to justify my C.
Right.
And that's we'll talk as we go through episodes on assessment, we can talk about cart and horse and that sort of thing. But for the moment with criticism, if I can't use it to sort of guilt
right
the dolt who doesn't care, just slap a grade at the top and hand it back. What do you think you should do there?
I do think that it's pretty close to what you just said. Just slap a grade on top and hand it back. And I don't mean don't mark their paper. But what I'm after here, I guess, is I do think that critique is a bad motivator. It is at times effective, but I don't think that it's best. I think there are other motivators that are better, you know, whetting the appetite, asking questions. But I said at the beginning that we weren't going to talk about that, so I'll stop that right now and get back to it. If that doesn't work and we're in a situation where critique needs to be offered, then, you know, the kid says, well, this is the best I can do. Yeah, that this is the best you can do by yourself. And now I have, you know, underlined several places here that you can improve with my help. And now I expect you to do that. And if you don't, then, okay, well, I'd love to just sit under a tree and talk about Aristotle all day. But we do have, most of us, external realities that are put on us through, like the school system that require us to put in grades, even if we don't like them. And you have to uphold that commitment too. So yeah, that's what you do.
Well, and I think that there's a twofold circumstance at work there, even in listening to you explain how you would go about it. There is the written feedback that follows into two categories. I can mark a misspelled word. I don't think that's a criticism.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I believe that's just me pointing out you got that wrong. No different than marking an incorrect answer on a math test. What I would call criticism is, okay, you did it this way. Did you consider, you know, when I start marking things with the word awkward or unclear or even pointing out fallacies and that sort of thing in their logic, even there, I guess there's a certain amount of objectivity to it. But when as I move more towards I as a better writer than the student, assuming that's true, am offering you a better way.
Right.
I think if they're not trying to go a better way, it becomes burdensome.
Yeah.
The quote unquote, he just doesn't like me.
Mm-hmm.
He's rejected what I did because he believes I could have done it better.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, so I think it's more effective at that point. If the student just doesn't want to improve, I think it's the horse and water problem.
Yeah, you're at an impasse.
You know, I'll pray for you. And you probably can't even say that to them, but that's the praxis available to you is unless the spirit moves, this kid's going to kind of be where they're at. But for the one that is seeking true and real improvement, I still find if I can make it work, and this is all a problem of size and how many students you have and how many assignments you have and how many essays you have as a teacher coming in on a given day. But if you could, that notion of sitting under a shady tree, if they can sit down, I found if I can sit down for 5 or 10 minutes with a student and talk back over and have them explain to me what I like this. I want to understand what you're doing. Talk to me about this paragraph.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
Sometimes I find out that I just didn't understand it, which often means that there's a stylistic issue or word choice or something. But it it tones down. If I would have tried to get there through the red ink, all they would have seen is that he spent a half a pen on me.
Right.
So there's a relational thing.
I think that's right.
Do I want my relationship to be sort of an email relationship or, you know, where a correspondence, or do I want it to be face to face? And I think good teaching is always better face to face than through the inked word, but sometimes the ink is all you've got.
Sure. Well, and I would say let's flip into then the way that we should offer critique. And I would say any critique that you're not willing to explain should not be offered. So I guess making that like positive, you should offer critique that you are willing to explain, and you should be willing to explain your critique, because that's where the student is going to grow. I see, like I'm thinking back to the stern tyrant, right? The football coach. You know, if he's your English teacher, then you are going to be very afraid. Like I want to say that you're going to be afraid to risk anything, and you're going to be afraid to take chances and actually write the best paper that you can. Yep. Because if I mess up when I'm trying to write a complicated sentence or express a complicated idea, oh man, he's going to bust me.
Yeah, it's going to be that gerunds, you've messed up all the gerunds. I've told you about gerunds. How could you have? And you know, little girl is going, I don't know what a gerund is.
You know, right.
I think teachers regularly assume too much.
Especially
in my area.
Well, and just remember, like, I don't know if you've had the situation before or whatever, but if you're in a situation where you're taking notes in a lecture, or you are talking with somebody about something that is outside of your normal purview, your ability to spell and your sentence structure suffer because your brain is working hard on the content. So
yeah,
those mistakes can be signs, indicators that the student is stretching and reaching and really trying hard. So I'm not saying don't point it out. I'm just saying be cognizant of that. Be aware of that, because that might be not a marginal student, but somebody who you really want to spend time with and cultivate. Yep.
And I think it's, you've hinted at this. Let me get it as overt as I can make it. It's really helpful in criticism if there's a shared ideal. If I'm trying to get this student to be a better writer, part of my job is to put really good writers in front of them.
Absolutely.
So that their taste is rising. They you know, anyone who tries to write and has a working knowledge of Shakespeare knows they've got room to improve. You know what I'm saying? And so I think
you
and I've had conversations about this notion that it's good to read good books, but it's better to read great books.
It's great.
The greatest books, the ones that bury us all, one, because they never get old, and two, the best writers in the world, we've kind of formed a show here about writing, but it's what I know best in critiquing. Whatever I'm trying to teach to the student, if there is this master out there that we both can look at, and I can point at him and say, you see how Mona Lisa's lips do what they do there? And the young aspiring painter goes, oh, well, how would I do that? It provides, this is what we talked about with the conversation thing and looking at great texts. Now the two of us that are talking, teacher and student, are talking about something bigger than both ourselves. And it's not just mean old Mr. Elliot who doesn't like the way I write. It's that Mr. Elliot wants me to become Da Vinci. You know? And I think that there's something much more winsome about that then I just got to figure out how to get Elliot off my back. You know, I can wrap my own mind around becoming Da Vinci a lot better than dealing with some cranky guy.
Well, so, Steve, I know that this has been a good conversation because our time is up and I have more to say now than when we started talking, but I think we've got to cap it there for the day and sign off. So I'll talk to you again, man.
All right. Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.